one of the most remarkable things about the Impressionist group, this informal but membership-driven organization of artists that had its origins in France in 1873, is that it was the first really important group of professional artists that included women amongst its members, and that thought of itself as being in that way modern. The notion that a woman could be a professional, that a woman could exist outside of her own, outside of her husband's identity and her husband's name, was something that was a radical notion in any European or even indeed American high bourgeois society in the 19th century. And amongst the many forms of social radicalism in terms of the rather conservative nature of French society at this period, in terms of social radicalism, one of the most important elements of the Impressionists was the inclusion of women. There are two women artists who were particularly important for the Impressionist circle, and each of them is going to get a lecture. And one of them was a French woman, and her name was Berthe Morisot, M-O-R-I-S-O-T. And she was an extraordinary woman who participated more fully in the Impressionist movement than any of the male artists save Camille Pissarro. And by participating most fully, I mean by that that in the 8 exhibitions organized by the Société Anonyme, the Anonymous Society of Artists, which was the Impressionist official name, of the 8 exhibitions they organized between 1874 and 1886, she was in all but one of those exhibitions. And she was out for the exhibition of 1879 only because she was having a baby. And it was difficult for her to juggle those two things at once. And so the demands of motherhood only took her out of one of the 8 group exhibitions. She had a better record as an exhibitor than did Monet, Renoir, or Degas amongst the men. And she was more central to the idea of Impressionist painting than most of the male artists who we now know a little bit better than we know her career. Morisot was born to a family of the upper middle class. Her family was not nobled, but they were very comfortable and wealthy. They had country properties. They had large houses in the city. And her father and mother had only daughters. And so she grew up in a highly comfortable, very closed, haute bourgeois, official French household, where women were educated in convent schools and at home. They were not allowed to mix with men except for close members of the family. They were chaperoned at all times outside the house before their marriage and even after their marriage. They were kept in many ways as beautiful and pure objects who could be interesting only in the confines that in which they were kept by in the sort of prison of their families. And this sense of being enclosed, of being unable to move freely in the world, is a sense that many of the most intelligent women who became members of the Impressionist circle fought against. And Berthe Morisot did it very strongly. As a young woman in the 1860s, she was allowed to take painting lessons because painting for an upper-class woman was thought of as something that was appropriate to do, not to be a professional painter, but to paint. It was like playing the piano and embroidering. It was okay, or reading novels. And she began to paint, and she began to be a rather serious painter in the late 1860s, and she took painting lessons from the great mid-century landscape painter Camille Corot, who encouraged her really to push herself further and to learn more and to test herself more. And she did so within the realms of modernity, and it's interesting that she did. And the artist who she chose to align herself with and to push her into the next sort of level of brilliance as an artist was Edouard Manet. She met Manet about the time that the painting In Back of Me was painted. And though she was not included amongst its 100% male artists and writers who were in the painting behind me, she was one of 2 female students of Manet who worked regularly in his studio, who came and who he criticized their paintings, and they painted side by side with him. The other was an artist named Eva Gonzalez, who is of less importance to the history of French art and who did not exhibit with the Impressionists. But Morisot was really pushed by Manet, and she pushed back. The first representation, the first painting that we're going to see, actually, in this lecture is a painting of Morisot rather than a painting by Morisot. And it shows us, first of all, what she looked like, and it shows us, it records her extraordinary friendship with Manet. It's a painting that was made in 1872, and it's a painting that has been for many, many years known mostly through a series of prints and drawings that Manet made during the process of working on it, because it has been kept until only the last 2 years in the family of Berthe Morisot, in her descendants, and seen by very few scholars. 2 years ago, it was purchased by the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, the greatest museum of 19th century art in the world, and now one can go see Manet's most beautiful painting of Berthe Morisot. In the early years of the 1870s, during the Franco-Prussian War and the Commune, during the years following the aftermath of those series of tragedies in France, Manet and Morisot were very closely drawn to each other. She came to his studio a lot, and there are at least seven oil, large-scale and medium-scale oil portraits of Morisot by Manet. And there was a kind of camaraderie. It was probably not a love affair because it was not permissible for people of their class to have love affairs, at least not officially. But their relationship was a really, really close one. And one sees here there's a sense in which she's coming into Manet's studio. Manet's seeing her in front of the window. We feel those sort of gauzy curtains of the great French windows, and this is the studio probably that we saw out the little garden of in the railway picture by Manet. And she's fully dressed. She may actually be in mourning. Her father died in the early 1870s, and she may be wearing black because she's in mourning for her father. She has this wonderful hat that's full of detail and incident and little ribbons on the side. She looks straight at us with a kind of alacrity. She's completely comfortable being seen. She has come from the out-of-doors because we have a feeling that she's dressed en grand tenue to be able to walk in the city. And she's come in and she's looking at Manet directly, and Manet is sort of glancing at her. There's a quality in this painting of complete conciseness, which is one of the hallmarks both of Manet's painting in the 1870s and of Morisot's aesthetic, which is that when you make a work of art, if you can make it with the fewest possible gestures, if you can be concise in the way that you represent, then you're totally successful, you're totally a master. And the sense that this is a two-color painting with a little bit of beige and brown being skin and hair, that's black and white, that is very strongly composed, that it's contre-jour, that the light is against the light, which is a kind of play, that's about silhouette, that it conveys a good deal of information about her with the fewest possible means. That means that it's successful, and that it also means it's intimate. There's a sense of it being handmade and intimate. Now, their relationship throughout the 1870s pushed Morisot from being a painter of landscapes and parks and gardens, which she had tended to be in the late 1860s, into being a painter of modern life, into being a Baudelairean painter, a painter who painted the world of women, the physical world to which she had access, but in as modern a way as her male compatriots painted the modern world as well. And I want to take you on a little tour of Morisot's world. First of all, it is an extremely refined world. It's a world mostly of rented nice houses, beautiful gardens, wonderful interiors with moldings and good furniture, expensive clothing, views onto the larger world, the world of the street or the world of the city, from the enclosure, from a safe enclosure. It's a world almost exclusively of women. We see very few men in paintings by Berthe Morisot. Not only is she a woman, but she represents the world of women. And in this way, her women are rather different than the women, the Amazons and the courtesans and the modern women and the Parisians painted by the men, because she is a woman. Interestingly, she signs her paintings, as do they, without her first name. Occasionally she'll put a B, but usually her signature is simply Morisot, so that her paintings don't carry gender as part of their clear meaning. However, in every catalog of the Impressionist exhibitions, she has her whole name. She doesn't attempt to masculinize herself or to hide her gender, such as the great French novelist Georges Sand did with a nom de plume of a man, so that she could be a woman without having the constrictions of being thought of as a woman. Morisot wanted to be thought of as a woman and to paint a woman's world. This is a marvelous pastel made around 1870 of Morisot's sister. And indeed, most of the figures in Morisot's paintings are related to her, are her daughter, her sister, her mother, her other sister, her maids, her friends, female friends who come into the world. And this is Edma Pontillon, who was her sister and who was obviously married at the time that this was painted. And this is also not an oil painting, but a pastel, which is in the Musée d'Orsay. And pastel is a medium that had long been associated with women. Some of the greatest early pastelistes in the 18th century were women. And pastel, because it's crumbly and soft and beautiful, was thought of as a feminine form. And it's a form in which Berthe Morisot succeeded very well early on in her career, and then she mostly gave it up because of its associations with femininity. Here one sees in this stunning pastel with this wonderful sort of bluish gray in the background, a tufted flower-covered sofa in a beautiful living room with a sort of shawl, a silk shawl arranged over it, matching draperies up above. Her sister also in mourning with her sewing left by her side. She is a little bit lonely and sad. We don't have the feeling that she's, you know, full of life and full of vivacity. She's not a muse, in other words. She's a model. And her indolence, the fact that she's completely, there's no energy whatsoever in her body. Her hands are at rest, her shoulders are slumped, her eyes are down, her head is in her chin. She's been sitting there for a long time, patiently waiting while her sister does the pastel. She's put down her sewing, so she's not even occupying herself at all with any task, and she's simply looking at one. The sense of luxury combined with a kind of melancholy and boredom is something which Morisot actually gets at more clearly than any of the male artists, because it's exactly what she herself had experienced. If you live life with nothing to do, if your goal in life is to be, if what you can do in your family is to be a wife, who then the servants do all the work, including raising the children, and you plan the day, and you plan the menus, and you sit, and you change clothes, and you receive visitors, and you read novels, and you worry about your husband coming home for dinner, and you live in this sort of cage, gilded cage, there is boredom associated with that, particularly if you're a woman of intelligence. And that boredom is one of the subjects of Berthe Morisot's art, because she understood it. She also understood the separation of women from the spectacle of urban life. And several times in her career, particularly in the early 1870s, painted it. And this is one of the most beautiful of the paintings. It represents the city of Paris from the Trocadero. And at that time, the Trocadero didn't have a building on it. It had a little place where you could, you know, have wine and a cup of coffee and some biscuits and look out at the view, because it's the biggest hill down in the Seine. Across the Pontienne is the Champ de Mars, where the army practiced their maneuvers in France, and where the École Militaire was, the military academy, was on the side. We see the dome of the Invalides, which is it's a great gilded dome by the great architect Ardoin Mansart, and it's associated with, again, the military, and the spires of important churches in the distance, the trees that ring the Seine, the carriages going by. We're in an area called Passy, which is now part of Paris, but which was then a very wealthy suburb. And we're in a part of Passy where women and children could go in the daytime and look out onto the spectacle of the city without ever being allowed to go into it unless they're in a carriage and unless they're chaperoned. And so the sense that this delicious spectacle of a city, the same city that was being painted directly by the male artists who were in it and who were on the quays and on the bank, in the museums and on the streets and dealing with the city directly, that city was only accessible to Berthe Morisot at a distance and from literature and from art. She herself, like the women here, the one beautifully dressed in black and the one beautifully dressed in white, and the little girl who is for all the world like the little girl in the Manet painting of 2 years later that we saw a couple of lectures ago, and she's looking through this barrier, simple as it is, but real as it is, with her school, little school uniform on, the little over thing that she wears at school, looking out into this vast and distant city. There's a sense in this painting, if one knows about Morisot and Morisot's lives, and particularly if one knows about how women in the upper classes lived and how strictured their lives were, again, of a kind of melancholy and sadness, of a distance between what men could move about in and what women couldn't. Now, Morisot was very, very interested in the history of French art, and in the way of making a kind of contribution to that history knowledgeably. And she, with Renoir, each read a book, a wonderful book that was written by two brothers called the Goncourt brothers in the late 1860s. They wrote a series of essays on the great French artists of the 18th century, of the Ancien Régime, Fragonard, Boucher, the great artists who painted court life, Watteau, Chardin, the artists of the Ancien Régime, the artists who were the major French artists of the previous century, the century before. And those essays were they're probably the most beautiful essays written about artists ever by anyone. And fortunately, they're translated into English, and you can even get them on the net in a book called 18th Century French Painting by Edmond and Jules de Goncourt. And I urge you to buy it and read them, because when you do, you'll read these pearly and glorious paragraphs of descriptive prose about paintings of gardens and aristocrats and shepherds and shepherdesses and a kind of idealized pastoral world of wealthy people and beauty of the aristocracy. That is a world that Morisot began to modernize in her own way. And this is a painting done in the early 1870s called The Butterfly Hunt or The Butterfly Catcher. And there are a number of paintings by both Boucher and Fragonard that represent hide-and-seek, in which little girls are hiding from shepherdesses or from their mothers or from a well-dressed courtier. And, of course, they're not hiding at all. It's like whenever you play hide-and-seek with a child and the child covers their eyes and in the child's mind they're invisible. Or if a child goes behind a tree, they're invisible. And that sense of being visible and invisible and playing in a kind of ideal garden is a sense that we have here. And the woman here is also doing something else. She's carrying a butterfly net, and she's going through the garden, and we see all these little scatters of white paint around in the painting. These we take to be blossoms in a blooming tree, but others might be butterflies, that this woman who looks at us, we've got her in the middle of her act of catching butterflies, the little girl in the background pretending to hide behind the spindly tree, the sense that no man has ever entered this garden. This is a garden of innocence, both of women and children. The baby in the corner, these are her nieces playing, and this is her sister, the same woman, Edma Pantillon, and in the background is the dutiful servant who's reading and sewing, the nanny in the background who's off to the far right, and all in this kind of quivering green realm. These paintings from 1873, 1872, 1874, from the years before the first Impressionist exhibition, were included in the first Impressionist exhibition, and they were adored by the critics because they're so beautiful. And they're about a world which, though modern, these women wear exactly contemporary, very expensive clothes. And in France in the 19th century, just like in New York today, you know the latest fashions, and you know what's in and what's out. And, you know, this long sort of sailor thing with the little scarf around her, and her sort of protective thing was in 1872 and out in 1874. And one can almost date these paintings, particularly for such a fashion-conscious artist as Morisot, by the costumes in them. And the way that what we know what the costumes look like is there were fashion magazines then, just like there are fashion magazines now. And she was oftentimes having her clothes made from the magazines, and they play a kind of, they kind of dance through these beautiful gardens. Now, in 1874, when her works were first shown, she was treated as a woman. And this was her fate, in a certain way, a fate that she accepted all the way through her career. And her works were thought of as being feminine. And that's something that she both despised and liked. She was ambivalent about it and used it, and we'll see it as we go through. She was the preeminent painter of vacations. And this family, when she marries in 1874, Eugène Manet, the brother of Edouard Manet, the painter, and therefore becomes a Manet. Her last name, in fact, throughout most of the Impressionist exhibition was not Morisot, but was Manet. But she painted always as Berthe Morisot. She was known professionally by her maiden name. She never adopted the name of her husband as her professional name, a modern thing in the 1870s. But they went together to vacation, and they mostly vacationed in England on the Isle of Wight. And the idea of that, there's a little French colony that was there, but the children could learn English. And the husbands and wives could practice their English. And there was a sense of sort of exoticism and luxury about going to England, which was richer than France, which had better summer properties. And here we are in this wonderful painting on the Isle of Wight in a rented cottage, as it was the same word in French, with its ridiculous balustrade and little things. There are little curtains that are up for the day, the stairs that go down to the beach. And, of course, this woman would never go to the beach dressed in her fancy shoes and her silk hose and all of her little ruffles and her beautiful hat. Her child is playing. Either there's a toy neglected in red down below. Another figure is either coming up the stairs. She's facing us with a veiled head and a parasol coming up the stairs to pay a call. And she is at home to receive people who are her equals in this luxurious, informal but luxurious place on the Isle of Wight, looking endlessly out at the sea as ships and boats pass by in endless succession, as if nothing ever really important happens. And Morisot paints her summer vacations, and in virtually every Impressionist exhibition includes them, with a kind of sense of intimacy, with a sense that this is my summer, and I'm sharing it with you. She began, as the 1870s went on, to become more ambitious, both in the scale of her paintings and in the sense that she begins to paint women who go out into the public, and women whose propriety is not altogether clear. And this is a wonderful painting called The Black Corsage, which is in the National Gallery in Dublin, in the National Gallery of Ireland in Dublin. It's a rather large painting compared to the others we've seen. Most of the other paintings we've seen are smaller than the paintings of male artists, and they're very delicate and feminine in their way. This is a big painting, and it does something with paint which most of the male artists didn't do, which is that it's messy. There's a sense that she's being almost crude, and she's painting this beautiful sort of shiny, shimmering, probably satin bodice of the dress is painted with gray and black paint that just move around like this. She's pushing, jabbing paint around. You can feel her gestures. You can feel almost that she's frustrated and emotional about this. If you look at the flowers that are in back of her, or maybe even in the wallpaper, there are these jabs of paint. It looks almost like an abstract expressionist painting. It's very strong and very much made, very messy. And her paintings were called unfinished and sloppy by male artists. There's one wonderful quotation that it's unfortunate that Mademoiselle Morisot never finishes anything. She is as if she is writing prefaces to books that she will never complete. The notion that these works of art aren't finished, that they're not signed, that they're in process, that they're messy and sloppy, that they're indeterminate, comes to be much more of a sense of what she is about. And she's in fact thought of as being one of the most radical artists after her early paintings that are very delicate and very sweet. Now, the imagery of this is a woman alone. She's dressed in evening costume. She's wearing a sort of choker necklace. She's quite beautiful. She has a black corsage that she's holding in her hand. She has a wrap around her. We don't know whether she's at a ball or whether she's in the box at the opera, but she's definitely not at home. She's out. And she's also alone and unchaperoned and looking at us with this kind of wide-eyed quality. We don't take her for a prostitute. If she had been painted by a man, if Renoir painted her or Manet painted her, we would think that she was a prostitute because most of their figures are. They're well-dressed courtesans. And this woman, because she's painted by a woman of the upper classes, we take to be another woman of the upper classes, being seen in an okay way. Now, in 1879, Morisot had her only child, whose name was Julie Manet. And Julie is one of the best documented children in the history of art. Indeed, one could do an entire exhibition of Impressionist children, because what do painters do if they paint the life around them? They paint their kids. And they paint their kids as they're growing up. They paint their kids in the garden. Morisot had one adored child who was enormously spoiled and very smart and very rich. And her whole life is recorded by mom. And this is one of my favorite paintings. She's in the garden. She's gotten a brand new toy. It's a little toy down here, and it's a kind of sled. It's actually hard to read, even in the finished painting, because the finished painting is so alive with motion, and your eyes are so busy dancing around amongst the gladioli and the little flowers here and the little rickety fence and the roofs of the nearby houses and figuring out whether this is a path or the roof or a wall of another house. And we're so diverted in this picture that the details don't matter to us. And when we look at it, one recalls there's a wonderful passage in a critical passage about that a critic was writing about Morisot, in which he talked about Morisot's colors being like crushed flower petals and jewels, that though her paintings are messy, her colors are like crushed flower petals and jewels. In other words, she is feminine, though she is sort of inchoate. The idea that the paintings are a little bit nervous and a little bit formless was also thought of as feminine, that she wasn't quite able to pull it together because she was a woman, and she painted a feminine realm in feminine ways. Now, young Julie, who is about, this is 1881, so she's two or two and a half in this, and she's in her own little garden, and she has that wonderful Manet red hair. She inherited the Manet hair, the hair of her uncle, really even more than her father. And she's playing in the garden with her toy. She's alone in this glorious fashion. And it sets us up for her greatest garden picture, which was painted in 1883. This is a painting that's recently entered the permanent collection of the Art Institute of Chicago. And it's Morisot's largest painting to date. It's almost 5 feet tall. And it's a painting that's very different in ambition and scale from anything she had hitherto done. Her husband was the one who was pushing her to paint bigger pictures so that her works would be noticed. And so she hired a model. We know that this woman's name was Millie. She was Irish, and she's seated on a kind of Italian chair, one of those folding Italian chairs, with a fan that also folds. So she's playing with things that fold. In the garden, either their urban garden in Paris, at a beautiful house in Paris, or their suburban garden, this is Julie, again, playing in the garden, the rake that you would need to work with neglected, because, of course, this woman would never work. The rake is for the gardener. It's not for her. Her tool is the fan. Her tool is not the rake. But it's painted with a kind of gestural abandon, which is incredible, and which virtually no male artist, including Manet, who died in the year that this was painted could match. This is a masterpiece made by an artist who struggled to make masterpieces and who succeeded fully in 1883 when she painted The Garden at the Art Institute.